On this episode of the Baseball Barbacast, Aaron Judge is back. The Yankees activating him after 3 months away with a rib injury. What does that mean for the Yankees? What does that mean for Aaron Judge? Who's kind of important, believe it or not. Then we talk about what happened over the weekend in Colorado with umpire Doug Eddings and Cardinals rookie reliever Hansel Rincon. Then we go around the league, talk about the Braves-Phillies series. Corbin Burns is back, and Shohei Ohtani finally admits it. He's probably not going to pitch again in 2026. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows it's been exactly 100 days since Aaron Judge last played in a major league game. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman. And that's a bummer because did you know he wears 99?
Ooh, so close. But they were able to get a bunch of retweets with the announcement on Monday that he was coming back. And yeah, that's a long time without Aaron Judge. And surprise, surprise, that is our opener.
Late Monday night, Labor Day late, the Yankees announced that they were activating Aaron Judge. And that is the perfect word because activate Aaron Judge is exactly what the Yankees need. The three-time MVP has missed 84 games since landing on the shelf with a rib issue since he stopped playing ball. The Yankees offense has gone from very good to pretty bad. This is not shocking. Aaron Judge is one of the, if not the best hitter on the planet. And for the Yankees lineup to tail off in his absence, that is not exactly front page news, but his return most certainly is. As we're talking right now, the Yankees are four games back of Tampa in the American League East, with four games left against the Rays. They are merely two games up over the Red Sox in the American League wild card for that first wild card spot. That battle is really just for home field advantage. Getting Aaron Judge now for the stretch run for September, this is a needle-moving moment.
Yeah, and I think that Judge coming back, they were very vague for a while. There was wonder, okay, is he going to need a rehab outing? Yeah.
About surprise, injuries? Surprise.
Yeah. So, you know, and even Aaron Judge himself was like, you know, he was consistent, from my understanding, saying, I will not need a rehab assignment. But there was also a period, I remember maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, when there were still so little updates where people were starting to worry, like, are we going to get this guy back in time for October? What is this really going to look like? And it seems like over the last 2 weeks, his activity really started to ramp up. We started to see him throwing. We started to see him taking BP. We started to see him take live BP. And at that point, it was like, all right, there's enough time to get this guy back in the lineup. I think that there's a lot of interesting things involved in this return. I want to get to something like super big picture about just like the story of Aaron Judge. Well, I think we'll do that at the end. But let's focus on the pressing matter of where does he fit in? Obviously, they'll make room for Aaron Judge no matter what. Yeah. You can roll your eyes and laugh at me. Yeah, duh. But this roster has changed a lot since he was last on the team, both because of the trade deadline and because of the injuries that have happened and then, you know, guys that have come back. And I do think that the fact that Trent Grisham just went on the injured list in some ways makes this simpler. But also continues to add more questions about what this full-strength Yankees lineup position player group is going to function. So you are well-versed in the Aaron Boone of it all. So why don't you tell us the expectations for how Aaron Judge fits back in?
You are right about the Grisham side of things. So for most of the season, Grisham's in center, and in Judge's absence, they're rolling rookie Spencer Jones out there. The thing with Spencer Jones is recently he has been playing very well. The type of player that absolutely needs to be in the best version of a Yankees lineup. Last week, Trent Grisham goes down, hits the IL. Jones moves from right to center. They bring Dominguez up to play right. Guess what, Jason Dominguez? You are probably not playing right field anymore. That's going to be Aaron Judge. Now, the really interesting thing is whether or not Judge is going to be the designated hitter at all. The Yankees, I think, have been pretty open. Most of the reporting has indicated that Judge is going to be the everyday right fielder in September, despite any of the lingering injury concerns. But like, if he needs a DH day or two, it wouldn't be shocking. And if he needs a DH day or two, that would reorient how this lineup looks and functions, just because that spot has gotten more important in the post-Stanton, post-deadline zone, where like Stanton goes down and the DH becomes something of a revolving door. At the deadline, they go get Luis Garcia, who's now playing first most of the time. Like, he has to be in the lineup every day. And the same thing is true with Paul Goldschmidt when they're facing a left-handed pitcher. I want to bring up two things before we talk about how healthy he is and why that matters. Like, is he at 100? Is he at 92? Whatever. One is, there was kind of hope the whole time that he was going to come back. At no point was Aaron Boone talking about him like he was an elderly grandmother in the way that he was talking about Giancarlo. Now, obviously, those are different situations for a variety of reasons, but you never got the, it's really good to see Aaron Judge breathing outside. It's really good to see Aaron Judge going for a walk to the park. It's really good, you know, to see Aaron Judge getting out to Mahjong this weekend. No, it was always like, Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge, and he is going to figure out a way to get back no matter what. And so here we are. And, you know, how healthy is he is the question. That is why I always thought he would come back, because he would be willing to play at less than 100. Does that make sense? Like, we were all, I just thought the story was always going to end with him on a baseball field, even if it meant him being a reduced version of himself.
Yeah, I think that conversations about how injured players still are when they come back, or if they are coming back from a serious thing, is like, how long until he's his full self? It also depends on the injury. And this one is so, like, we don't, okay, let's think back to last year. He has his flexor strain in his arm. And that's very straightforward. It's like, can he throw? You know, how is this going to impact his throwing? That was the, every time he would get a ball, it would be like, oh, can he throw? Can he not throw? What's going on? There are some other injuries like that where you can kind of target it and think about one specific motion, one specific part of the game that is being impacted. In this case, I'm not totally sure we can do that, but it's also clearly a serious injury. It took him out for multiple months. That wasn't an accident. So we're never really going to know what's hurting him exactly, what part of his swing or his running or his stamina, like all of that is probably going to be impacted to varying degrees that we might not necessarily always know the specifics of. But I agree that when you miss this much time, yeah, you're going to wonder. But also the way that they were talking about it made it seem like he was going to be back. Now, I will say that the timing of it is also important. We mentioned the, you know, machinations of the lineup and the defensive situation in New York and how Aaron Boone will sort that out. Having time to figure that out is one thing. I also think it's important for him to just play for a few weeks before it's October. That will impact the way, though, for better or for worse, how I think we're talking about him by the time we are in October. Because if he was activated 2 days before the postseason, I think there would be a lot of like, all right, like, let's not get our hopes up. The dude just came back. He obviously made sure he was here for October, but we don't really know. I think unless there's some sort of reason we're watching him struggle in ways, I think by the time we get to October, people are going to be like, you're Aaron Judge, dude. You're here. You need to be the guy that's leading this team on a deep postseason run. And that's a bigger conversation I think we can have here in a second. But I do think that that's also very important for just like establishing his, getting him back in the rhythm of things. And everyone will make the obvious jokes about saying, all right, well, that's good. Come back against the Rockies. That's the same thing.
I was literally about to say that.
All right, there you go.
I was about to say that. And
yes.
I think it is somewhat relevant. If they were playing the Phillies this week at home and he had to see Lizardo, Wheeler, Sanchez, that's a different proposition than what the Rockies are going to roll out there. Now, the Rockies pitchers are Major League Baseball players, yes. But I think that part of why this is the perfect time to bring him back is that you have a little bit of latitude, probably in this Rocky series, to take him out of a game early, to DH him, to kind of slow play his return. Whereas if the Rays were in town for four, as they are 2 weeks from today, you can't really afford to do that. And so I do think, for all the jokes that are mean about the Rockies being a rehab assignment, I think it is not a factor.
Sure. I think too, though, I mean, let's now zoom farther out about just like what the Judge story has been, and also rewind it a year. Because let's think about how, I don't got to tell you, but I guess you can remind everyone because you were there, how Judge's season ends last year and what the story is about Aaron Judge at the end of last season, which was, damn, he did it. Unfortunately, nobody else did, and the Blue Jays are going to the World Series. Right? So it was like Aaron Judge had his moment. The questions about him in October were at least quieted for a week or two, right? He had the Red Sox series, and then he looked incredible. And it wasn't enough, and the Yankees lost, and you know, we move on. I think this year, because of the point I just made earlier, that assuming he comes back and doesn't have any setbacks and is just in the lineup for the next 3 weeks, once it's go time, we're not going to be talking about the rib. It's going to be, you're Aaron Judge.
Disagree.
One of the best players of a generation.
I disagree.
Okay. I mean, let me finish the bigger thing. The Yankees are going to go into this postseason, and we're going to have more of these conversations, of course, in the coming weeks. They're still going to be viewed by many people as the best team in the American League. I do believe that. Now the Judge is back. Okay. And so because of that, he is still the headliner, and whatever seed they end up being, of course, they're going to try and chase down the Rays or at least get that home field for that wildcard series. It is going to be viewed as, this is another opportunity, a great opportunity in this weak American League, because no one will respect the Rays, to go back to the World Series, which and maybe finally win a World Series that the Yankees still have not done with Aaron Judge. So I do strongly believe that is going to be, because he's back now, and it's going to be 3 weeks where he's just in the lineup and probably playing like Aaron Judge. Sure, if he hits 100 over the next 3 weeks and we say, he's clearly hurt, he clearly sucks, this is what, we can't count on anything. I don't think that's going to be true, because I think that he's Aaron Judge, and I think that if he's healthy enough to play, he's going to be really good. And so I think that this is, it's good. It's like you'd rather have him than not have him. But I do think that the story will quickly then shift to, you're the Yankees. You have all these amazing pitchers, and now you have Aaron Judge, and now Ben Rice, et cetera, et cetera. Now it's go time. You got to go take advantage of this weak American League. That is where I think we are heading, and I think Judge being back essentially confirms that, but feel free to disagree.
Here's what I disagree about specifically. I think the rib, as it pertains to his postseason failures or successes, is whatever narrative you want to construct. So if you're a Judge defender at all costs and he has a bad October, well, you can lean on the rib and you can say it was a weird season, it was stop start, not necessarily creating excuses, but I mean, having 2.5 weeks of buildup before October, that is not a typical season, right? Now, there are certainly going to be aspects of Aaron Judge's body that are probably more rested than they would have been otherwise. This is like another thing to think about. And traject and standing in against live pitching makes coming back maybe easier than it used to. But nothing replicates being in the box for big league games. And so if Judge goes out in October and struggles, it does give people an out. At the same time, now that he has this runway, and this is what's most interesting to me, is that he in his own mind is removing this excuse from the table, right? Aaron Judge is not going to point to his rib as a reason for any failure, because that's just not how he's wired. It is worth noting that in the past, last year, coming off of that arm injury, missing, I think he missed about 10 days, he struggled for the first kind of week and change after that, coming back, which is understandable. Like when you don't play and you don't see live pitching, it is very difficult to hop back into that environment. How Judge looks between now and the end of the year is maybe like the single biggest question mark in the sport. over the last 3 weeks?
I mean, in
the
AL, I think it pretty much is. I mean, again, we're going to be viewing these two postseason paths very differently obvious reasons, but yeah.
There's another multi-time MVP in another league who looks kind of discombobulated right now, and that's also important. Shohei Ohtani, cough. But Judge looking full Judge versus Judge looking injured-ish, the delta there for what it means for the Yankees and therefore what it means for the American League is enormous. I do think it is worth sort of emphasizing how much worse they were without him. Like, this is not surprising. And because the Yankees in the 84 games without him were 6 games above 500, you can kind of trick yourself into being like, oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. Well, a lot of that was run prevention. A lot of that was pitching. Without Aaron Judge, the Yankees were 26th in runs per game, 29th in batting average, 30th in on base, 26th in slugging, and just 10th in home runs, okay, which is low for them. Before he went down, they were 4th in runs per game, 13th in batting average, 5th in OBP, 2nd in slugging, and 1st in home runs. Thank you for listening to my podcast where I tell you that Aaron Judge helps the Yankees offense.
Yeah, I mean, the other point I would make about that, those splits, is, and he's been starting to look better, is Ben Rice. Like, Ben Rice, for those first 2 months, was just as good as Aaron Judge. Now, you could say, well, great, now that Aaron Judge is back, Ben Rice will probably also benefit from that. 100%, right? That's totally true. But Ben Rice was very bad in June and good in July and then very bad again in August. So we kind of rode the wave with him. I think that he's shown enough that I still expect him to be one of the best hitters on this team, if not basically the second best hitter on this team, depending on what you think of Bellinger. But also, let's see how all these pieces fit together now that we are working in the Luis Garcia Jr., right? Now that we are working in Elliot Ramos, whatever that means. Now that we are working in a Spencer Jones, who seems to start to be figuring something out that could make him a valuable hitter farther down the order, sure. Right? I mean, that's just the effect of having you plug in an Aaron Judge. It's not just everything that you're getting from him. It's how it impacts the rest of the lineup. And I think that that is what has to be so exciting for Yankees fans now over the next few weeks before it gets to, you know, crunch time.
Last point, the Yankees without Judge are so freaking left-handed where it's Rice, Bellinger, Garcia, Jones, Chisholm, Wells, McMahon. Okay. Yes, against lefties, there's Goldschmidt and Caballero and Ellie Ramos, kind of, they all platoon to a certain extent. But when you look at who they're going to play, almost certainly who they're going to play in the first round, the Boston Red Sox, and how left-handed that Red Sox pitching staff is, where the Yankees in a three-game set are probably facing Sonny Gray righty, Payne Tully lefty, Ranger Suarez lefty, bulk guy Jake Bennett, who's in the rotation now but probably won't start a game, lefty, Chapman lefty, Eric Miller lefty. And to have Judge just change the pace a little bit here is helpful.
Garrett Crochet lefty. Some reporting this week. Let's just do quickly on the Red Sox before we take a break, because they are a very relevant character now. The value of getting Aaron Judge back is not just to have him ready for October when you know for sure that you're going to be there. They are only 2 games up on the Red Sox right now. The Red Sox have won 6 in a row. They mopped the Orioles 5 in a row. They mopped the Orioles over the weekend, which if this was a normal Monday pod, maybe we'd be leading with it. But because it is Tuesday, we shove them to the back of this first segment. But they deserve a little mention here because they are heating up again and are at least making the Yankees sweat. Now, those two teams do not play anymore, and the Yankees do have the tiebreaker. So the Red Sox would have to finish with the better record than the Yankees in order to past them in the standings. But that is interesting. And where that series is from a home, who that is important, obviously. And as I just mentioned, too, some reporting that Gare Crochet is at least moving towards the possibility of being available in relief. No chance he's going to be a rotation option. That has been completely wiped off the table. But even him as a something you have to think about is not something to add to this bullpen that already has Chapman and Eric Miller. And it's so hard to even talk about Crochet because it's like, how hard is he going to be throwing? I have no idea. But it is an interesting thing. And but most importantly, as you said, they also have some really good starting pitchers in Tolley and Ranger Suarez, who are also left-handed. So the Red Sox Yankees just little race over the next few weeks is going to be really interesting. Of course, that Yankees Rays series, which is not until the final week of the season, that is four games. The Rays just need to win one of those to have the series tiebreaker over New York. So unless the Yankees can really catch up to them and then mop them, whatever, the Rays are still in pretty good shape here. But how the rest of this AL East shakes out, Baltimore starting to fall back. Toronto seemed to be surging. They just had a terrible loss last night in Sacramento. There's still room here for four AL East teams if Toronto wants to make it happen. Baltimore starting to fall out of it. But there's something very real to play for all of these teams left in this division, and I think that's what makes it so compelling.
All right, let's take a break. And when we get back, we will tilt our hats ever so slightly to the side and make fun of umpire Doug Eddings.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We're not doing a full weekend recap like we normally do, but there is something that happened over the weekend that we need to talk about.
Jordan, over the weekend in Colorado, they tried to play a baseball game and a culture war broke out when home plate umpire Doug Eddings made a damn fool of himself at Coors Field. Let's run through the facts and then we'll run through the feelings. The Cardinals had a young gentleman by the name of Hansel Rincon making his major league debut out of the bullpen on Friday night, a 24-year-old Dominican youngster with a quick arm and a nice changeup. With one out and a 2-0 count, home plate umpire Doug Eddings stopped play to inform Mr. Rincon that his Cardinals cap was askew. And could he please return it to the upright and seated position facing forward and not off to the side? Rincon did so. He complied with Doug Eddings' order. After being removed for the game, after removing his pitcher from the game, Ollie Marmol goes out to talk to Eddings about Eddings' request, which was very abnormal. They argue. Marmol goes back to the dugout. Eddings then gives a pitch clock violation to the Cardinals for Marmol's time wasting. Another abnormal decision. Ollie, predictably, goes out and gets tossed. I am not a lip reader, but you can see Ollie saying, you're asking him about the hat? The hat? Keeps saying the hat. So it was obviously about the hat. Then later in this game, Doug Eddings at home plate makes an embarrassingly awful call on a bang bang play that goes against the Cardinals. They are out of challenges, so they cannot review it. Everyone on the internet is dunking on Doug Eddings. In the post game comments, when umpires are a big part of a game's story, they do talk to reporters after games sometimes. Eddings said, this is via the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, quote, the batter said, hey, can he wear his hat like that? I really didn't know, but it was really, really crooked. I asked the catcher to tell him to straighten his hat out, and the pitcher did. That batter was Hunter Goodman. Saturday, Hunter Goodman says, yo, WTF, I at no point asked the umpire to tell the pitcher to straighten his hat out. Doug Eddings is making that up. Eddings apologist to Rincon on the field on Saturday. All the Cardinals players and supposedly the Rockies players are like walking around with their hats tilted in defense of Hansel Rincon. He goes back and pitches on Saturday with the tilt, gets absolutely blasted. Sunday gets optioned back to AAA Memphis. Jordan, there are a lot of different threads to pick through here. Where would you like to begin?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot to criticize here. I think the fact that, honestly, the fact that you had the players immediately, all of them, in some cases on both teams, going out of their way to be like, yeah, we're going to wear our hat like this rookie that just got called up because you're being so ridiculous, is, as in some ways silly as it might seem, like, honestly, kind of encouraging and like something that I'm not even 100% sure we would have seen that level of solidarity X number of years ago. So that was certainly appreciated.
I agree with. I was going to get to that in a bit, but we can get to that now. That is a fundamental, significant, enormous sea change in our sport. What happened in this dugout? It felt like one of those AI Facebook posts. Heartwarming. You know, Derek Jeter saves puppy, except it was Cardinals dugout backs Dominican reliever with hat tilted sideways. Could you imagine this happening 10 years ago, 15 years ago? No, like absolutely not. The idea that the whole dugout, to be clear, many of whom do not know Hansel Rincon, like at all, okay? A lot of these guys have played with him in AAA or in the minor leagues this year, Quinn Matthews and, you know, Leo Bernal. But like Ryan Stanek has like maybe never met this guy, you know, like, but it's the principle of the thing. It is also a reminder that baseball players hate nothing more than umpires being, you know, overly involved in the game. That is paramount. That is disdain number one. But from a cultural perspective, just to see players support this young Dominican kid who is expressing himself on the mound in a way that was genuine, funny, and didn't make too big a deal of the thing was so refreshing to see.
Yeah.
And I found my takeaway from this entire story, really, Doug Eddings and his policing of his preferred version of baseball, people like that will always exist. Like individual actors, and the sport from a, you know, structural perspective is all like has always been more opposed to emoting and self-expression and et cetera, et cetera. Like those actors are always going to exist. But for the overwhelming number of people involved in the story to back Rincon and not Eddings is a big deal and makes this very cool.
Yeah. At the same time, I mean, there's the basic of, right, the headline of umpire trying to police how young Dominican players wearing his hat. Like, that is all problematic in and of itself, the undertones, the direct nature of it. I still cannot get over him saying that Hunter Goodman said this. I mean, that is so...
This is the lie. He just made it up.
Like, and whether it was a complete miscommunication, a misspeak, a misunderstanding of what happened to Hunter Goodman, that doesn't matter. Talk about that can't happen. Dragging Hunter Goodman into this is absurd and so unprofessional.
Hunter Goodman,
and,
who, by the way, said he got a lot of hate online.
Of course.
From people who were like, hey, why are you telling this Dominican kid to straighten his hat? Hunter Goodman, innocent bystander, and in a... like. You're right. That part of it is arguably the most unprofessional aspect of it. The other thing is more problematic, but like trying to lie your way out of your mistake is so embarrassing.
Yeah. And again, maybe it was a miscommunication or a misunderstanding or a misheard or it was retelling it in a bit. It doesn't matter. Once you get to the point, once you are speaking to reporters, if you're the umpire, and you don't have your story. Like, that was the part when that came out. I was just like, there is not that I didn't. And this is the worst part is I didn't want to believe it. But unfortunately, and this has nothing to do with Hunter Goodman specifically, I was just like, okay, yeah, we've seen other players also try and put, as we know throughout baseball history, thankfully less so recently, but we've seen other players to the point where, unfortunately, for at least the brief moment, I kind of had to believe it. And then thankfully the next day, Hunter Goodman comes out and is like, no, that's ridiculous, you know? And that's what was so dispiriting and why, frankly, like that part of it, the fact that Doug Eddings clearly does not have the best reputation, even though he has been a major league umpire for a long time. This is not some young ump that is trying to make a statement, because if anything, that's the opposite. Generally, the younger umpires are the ones who, while sometimes can lose control of the game because they don't have necessarily the respect of the managers in the same way, Doug Eddings has been around a long time. How do you know? You get tweets like this from Chipper Jones, who quote tweets this situation and says, ah, Doug Eddings, I believe I addressed his behavior and attitude a while back. Not surprising at all. So I don't know what exactly Chipper Jones is referring to as when him saying, I addressed his behavior a while back. Not sure what that means, but it just means that Chipper Jones, who, of course, has not played Major League Baseball for a long time, but played Major League Baseball when Doug Eddings was umpiring, does not think highly of this person. Now, does Chipper Jones' opinion mean the most in all situations? Not necessarily, but it is a good example of like, this is something where, you know, this is an umpire who has rubbed players the wrong way time and again. And now here you, and that's been, by the way, that is also relevant when we have these umpire dust ups. Like, priors do matter, in my opinion. Maybe it doesn't excuse ones. Like, when these happen, sometimes it's like, for example, I'm not going to go into the specifics of this one, but we had a Tony Vitello, you know, circus last week. And the umpire involved in that was Alan Porter, or at least at the time, one of them. I know the first one was Ryan Blakeney, whatever. But when Alan Porter throws out Tony Vitello and then throws out Ron Wotus the next day before the game, I'm not saying Alan Porter is always in the right, but that's an umpire who has a very, very, very good reputation, who is considered one of the best. Okay. When you have a situation like this where Doug Eddings has clearly been pissing off managers and players alike for years, it's really hard to end up taking their side in any respect, even if in this case it would be hard to regardless.
No one umpire deserves to be celebrated or discarded over one single thing, one single event, because it is a difficult job. And we're generally sympathetic to umpires, and we find umpires to be a fascinating corner of this world and this sport that we enjoy following. But Eddings' reputation undoubtedly precedes him here. Do you know he was the home plate umpire in the 2005 ALCS when A.J. Pruszynski ran to first in the drop third strike call? He was the one who messed that play up. He was on the field when Bonds tied Hank Aaron. He was the home plate umpire for Cal Ripken Jr.'s final game. This is not someone who was born yesterday or started umpiring yesterday. This is someone that has been a detrimental part of our baseball world for a bit now, it seems. And I was talking to someone about this, and they were half jokingly like, see, this is what happens when you take the responsibility away from the umpires. When you put in ABS and you put in the replay system, these people were born to police. They were born to control the game, to set a state. They were born to govern, okay? They were born to govern, and you've removed their governing abilities, and therefore they're lashing out and conducting themselves like goofballs.
And it's, I think one of my takes that a lot of people disagree with, but, and in this case, obviously, I'm not going to be defending the behavior and the decision and the communication, obviously. But I do like umpires being characters. Even if that does mean sometimes throwing out managers that don't deserve it, I do think that at the end of the day, this is entertainment.
I don't want them to be treated fairly. Wallpaper.
Yeah, like I do like that they each have a little bit of personality with their strike. Like, I think there can be room for that. And then that's also part of the conversation of, do we want full robo umps, whatever. But, you know, to a point, right? I don't want them to be the story. I'm just saying there are times when they become the story when it's more harmless and I can laugh and be like, all of this is silly. So I'm just going to smile at it and move on. Whereas I know players and managers, it is their livelihood. They do want to, the games matter. I get that. There are times when I can look at umpires being buffoons and be like, you know what? This is relatively harmless. I'm just going to laugh at this. This is obviously not one of those cases. Yeah. I'm just saying that I do think that there's room for that sometimes. This is just this is the opposite of that.
The more I dwell on this, while the original sin here of telling Rincon to straighten up his hat is probably like the most disqualifying part of this from like an ethical perspective, from a cultural perspective, Eddings's inability to not allow that, like his willingness to let that spark a power trip that results in him assessing a pitch clock violation, blowing a call, and lying to the media about Hunter Goodman, that is all like just such a professional no-no.
Totally.
And that's the part where if I'm the league, I'm like, brother, what are we doing?
Yeah. And sounds like the league, Ken Rosenthal reporting that the league at least in some way communicated that that was not all right. This is from this is from Ken. This is interesting, and then we'll take a break. Ken reported the apology. So as you mentioned, the next day he did go and apologize to Rincon. Ken reports the apology umpire Doug Eddings issued to St. Louis Cardinals rookie Hansel Rincon on Saturday came after Major League Baseball told the veteran ump that he acted inappropriately. So that's something. And then they ask MLB for a statement. The quote, Saturday's gesture of apology by Doug on the field speaks for itself, a league spokesperson told The Athletic. It's unclear whether MLB will discipline Eddings further. I mean, that's the thing. The
nothing like an apology. Umpires,
yeah.
The precedent for umpires apologizing is very small, but there's nothing like an apology that comes after being told that you have to apologize.
Yeah. And the precedent of umpires being disciplined is like, I don't even know what that almost doesn't. I mean, that's the bigger question about all these situations is like, there's no recourse. Like these guys are, you know, bulletproof in a lot of respects. Because yeah. So anyway, that is certainly a story that got a lot of attention for understandable reasons. Well, let's take a break. When we return, we will talk a little bit more about actual baseball that's being played that matters a little bit more than the Cardinals and the Rockies. We'll be right back on Baseball Barber.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's finish up, go around the league. A delightful four-game set finished up yesterday in the city of brotherly love with the Phillies and Braves finishing where they started, splitting two games apiece. Braves on Friday, Phillies Saturday, Braves Sunday. Phillies taking the kicker on Monday behind a complete game shutout from Jesus Luzardo. Let's actually start there. Jesus Luzardo has the lowest ERA in the National League since June 1st. He got off to a weirdly slow start, an unlucky start this season for the Philadelphia Phillies, but over the last couple of months has been one of the best pitchers in the world, and as a result is probably going to finish in the top five for NL Cy Young.
I mean, Luzardo's, I think just them getting him, and not that he wasn't a good pitcher before, but just how much better he's gotten since he got there, them giving him an extension. It's one of the best, you know, transactions that Dombrowski has made since he got there. And not that they were dying for frontline starting pitching, but he is another big part of why this team is so terrifying if they can get to October and not forget how to hit, because this is one of the best left-handed pitchers in the league. And for him to have the game yesterday against the Braves lineup that is starting to figure it out, and certainly Acuna, who we'll talk about here in a second, was so impressive. And then, what was it, an hour 51, the fastest game in 2026. So I'm sure everyone appreciated it that well. I don't know. I guess they won, right? So the Phillies will take.
I disagree.
You think they got,
if it's
screwed,
Labor Day, Labor Day,
day
beautiful
game.
Weather here on the Eastern Seaboard, day game, you're off work. I'm paying for a ticket at Citizens Bank Park to see the Braves. At least go over 2 hours for me. Jesus Luzardo, arguably a little too dominant. The only run in that one was a Kyle Schwarber solo shot late off Didier Fuentes. And I actually want to talk about that quickly, because it is easy to dunk on Walt Weiss for leaving Fuentes in to face Schwarber in a 0-0 game when Dylan Lee, one of the best southpaw relievers in the sport, is hot and ready in the bullpen. If that's your opinion, you were not watching this game live, because Didier Fuentes looked untouchable.
Well, and he's been incredible. Like, I also sort of disagree with the matchup if you have Dylan Lee, because Dylan Lee's also very good. But yeah, sure. I mean, Fuentes is fantastic.
And it's not as if Schwarber is a bum against left-handed pitching, okay?
No.
Fuentes, coming in the game, he comes in the game in the seventh, strikes out Bohm, strikes out Stott, Marsh fly out, comes back out for a second inning, strikes out Real Muto, strikes out Justin Crawford. So he struck out four of the five guys he faced. And it's like, yeah, I would let him face Schwarber. Absolutely. Throws one down the pipe. Schwarber doesn't miss it. Off the facing of the second deck. Braves win 1-0. And Fuentes is a really interesting lens, kind of vehicle into the comparing these two teams' pitching staffs. Because when you put the starting rotations next to one another, it's not even close. If you were building a five-man rotation from these two teams, it would be Chris Sale. Like, if you needed to start it tomorrow, it would be Chris Sale, and then it would be four Phillies, right? It would be Wheeler, Luzardo, Sanchez, and Nola, who look great again on Sunday.
Or Painter. But this version of Painter looks as good as any of these other
Braves
pitchers.
This version of Painter looks great. Absolutely. However, the Phillies bullpen right now is in a bad place. And the Braves bullpen right now is in a pretty freaking good place with Dylan Lee and Fuentes and, of course, Raisel Iglesias at the back end. There are only two relievers, really one and a half relievers that I trust in the Phillies right now. That is Duran, who is incredible, obviously. And then Jonathan Bolin has had a really nice year. Ryan Kirkering has struggled. Alex McFarland had gotten a bigger role. He gives up the huge Acuna home run on Sunday to lose that game. Brooks Raley's been fine. Jose Alvarado's not what he once was. The trust tree is more of a sapling in Philadelphia at this point, and it is easy to see how that could be their eventual undoing in October.
Yeah, and back to the Braves bullpen. I mean, they're doing this without Robert Suarez, who they signed and was amazing before he got injured, and does not seem like he's coming back anytime soon. Doesn't seem like he's going to be a factor for the rest of the season. But Iglesias, who has not been as good recently, but they have these other weapons, Fuentes particularly, who can go multiple innings, multiple left-handers, and not only Dylan Lee and Dylan Dodd, but also Brent Suter, and Ray Kerr,
who throws
really hard.
Can we talk about Brent Suter for a second? Have you seen Brent Suter recently, like in person?
No.
He is yoked now.
Oh, yeah.
Suter.
Yeah.
When he came up, was like this wiry goofball who, you know, he was always a crazy athlete. Like, he's always been a sneaky great athlete. He's put on a ton of mass and looks shredded. And it is just funny to me. Like, is he one of the more goofy, whimsical, like kind-hearted fellas in the sport? Probably. Like, he's in the Matt Boyd category.
Yes.
And the idea that guy is also ripped is just kind of funny to me.
Right. Although, just to be clear, like, he still has first percentile fastball velocity. So this, even if Jake is correct that he looks completely ripped, not throwing hard, but also, like, he gives you a different look. He is giving you something different than Dylan Lee, than Dylan Dodd, than Ray Kerr, who does throw really hard. But with Fuentes, with Iglesias, that's true. That's allowing you to shorten the game. How many times can you really do that, though, if you're not actually getting... The point is that it does lessen the pressure on the non-sale starters. Now, can you get through all of October like that? Going to be tough, but there's at least a path there.
In 2019.
the Nats did in 2019. They had more than just one starter. Okay, so let's be very real about that. I think, though, that honestly, that's more relevant related to the Phillies, is it not? I mean, that's the comp more that you're looking at there than the Braves. It's that, okay, you've got your starters and then maybe one or two relievers and you roll with them. I think the other big thing from this series we just have to touch on is Acuna before we move on. I mean, obviously the homer against McFarland speaks for itself. Him just going all in and being like, I'm going to take my time around the bases. I'm Ronald Acuna Jr. I finally feel like myself. And the curtain call on the road for more booze was exquisite. I mean, has this happened before? Probably. I can't really remember something like this, but it's so funny and so perfect for everybody involved, for both sides, right? To do it in Philly, for anybody to do it in Philly, but for a Brave to do it in Philly, for Acuna to do it while laughing, while smiling, was a beautiful moment. And it just makes me so excited to think about what this would look like for Acuna in the postseason. It's so important to raise this Brave ceiling. He's such a big part of that. And now we're starting to see it. And even as he looked out of sorts for much of the season, and we talked about him a few weeks ago, I just kept saying, like, look, man, it's in there. You can't tell. He was one of the best hitters in baseball when he was healthy last season. And even though he's looked kind of out of sync this year, you can't tell me it's not in there. And now we're really starting to see it. And that is exactly what you want to see if you're Atlanta and you really want to start dreaming big about what you can achieve in October.
I had talked about how he was struggling with elevated fastballs. He handles that one for McFarlane on Sunday to tie things up at 4 late. But it wasn't just that he wasn't making great contact with elevated fastballs. He was chasing up a lot. And his at-bat plate appearance against Lizardo in the ninth on Monday was just as important, where he takes 3 fastballs above the zone against Lizardo with one out and a one-run game in the ninth to draw a walk. Now, he ends up being stranded and the Braves don't move him, but like that is also important, the version of Acuna that's not chasing, that's not expanding the zone, that's keeping, you know, his happy place right where it needs to be. I was very impressed. He looked really good. Last point I wanted to bring up, if these two teams do match up in an October series, is Philly's ability to quiet Atlanta's lefty bats. This is a very left-handed heavy operation besides Acuna, with Drake Baldwin and Matt Olson and the left-handed version of Ozzie Albies and Mike Yastrzemski and and Michael Harris. Like, they have a lot of lefty swingers. The Phillies pitchers kind of dominated them. And I'm not just talking about the lefties. Like, obviously, Sanchez and Lizardo are going to do a good job against the left-handed pitcher, against the left-handed hitters. Non-Lizardo Sanchez pitchers kept Braves lefties 8-47 over the weekend.
Mm.
Okay. 8-47. That's Nola. That's Wheeler. That's, you know, Jose Alvarado, who I know is lefty. That's Meza. That's like everyone but Lizardo and Sanchez did a good job. Matt Olson was 1-14 with a walk. Michael Harris only had 2 singles. Drake Baldwin didn't draw. Like, they did a good job against that group. And that's a big deal if they meet up in October, rather.
Now, the Phillies, this will be a good transition to our next topic. The Phillies are still just a half game ahead of the Chicago Cubs for the top wild card spot. Who hosts that series is going to be very interesting. However, there is another team who is currently in postseason position that is about to get a reinforcement that I truly have given so little thought to over the last year, considering their accomplishments. It is honestly strange, and that is the Arizona Diamondbacks, who tonight will welcome back Corbin Burnes to their rotation. He will be pitching tonight in Kansas City. Yes, in Kansas City. Should also just quickly mention that I believe Zach Gallen is also returning this week. But let's focus on Corbin Burnes, because Corbin Burnes was kind of a big deal. Corbin Burnes was one of the best pitchers in the league. And then when he signed with the Diamondbacks, it's first of all, it's one of the most stunning free agent signings that I can remember. It's very vivid for me just because it was right after Christmas. That offseason, I was with my in-laws, and I just remember waking up to that news and just being like, excuse me, what happened? Corbin Burns signed with the Diamondbacks? And this is coming off his, again, that one weird year in Baltimore. He wins the Cy Young with the Brewers. He has established himself as like clearly a top 10 pitcher in the league. And then he makes 11 starts in 2025 with the Diamondbacks where he doesn't. It's a 2.66 ERA. But it was like, okay, but this isn't really looking like one of the best pitchers in the league. He blows out, which was a huge blow, not only because it was like, oh my God, we just gave this guy all this money, but it was like Corbin Burns, part of what you were paying for is that the dude posts, right? He had been so durable over the previous four seasons. A humbling reminder that that really doesn't mean anything when your job is to throw the baseball hard. That can happen to anybody's UCL. He goes down, gets surgery. Is just off the map. And frankly, because it's the Diamondbacks and they're not necessarily a team that is being hounded for injury updates the way that the big market teams are, especially for like a Garrett Cole coming back from surgery, for example, or several others, he's just kind of been hanging out in the background and most relevantly did experience a setback earlier this season that delayed this return a little bit beyond what we've grown used to, which is, you know, the 12-13 month timeline. But now he's finally back at a time that you couldn't ask for more of a perfect timing for Corbin Burns, for the Diamondbacks, who are in this heated race with San Diego for that last wildcard spot. And I'm just really interested to see to what degree he can reassert himself as a main character starting pitcher, which he was for multiple seasons in Milwaukee, and then obviously with that big trade to Baltimore, and then as a free agent. Because the Diamondbacks are good enough to get in here. Is he someone that can pitch well enough to start game one if they get in against the Dodgers, against Chris Sale and the Braves, against like how this goes for him over the next few weeks is so interesting. They, of course, have to actually get into the postseason. But just the pressure on him to immediately be a stabilizing force, if not an impact starter, is so interesting for a pitcher we just haven't really been talking about.
Speaking of a pitcher that we haven't really been talking about, Shohei Ohtani speaks.
Not a pitcher.
He speaks, Jordan. For the first time in weeks, Shohei Ohtani mustered up the internal courage to interact with the spooky, spooky media. After yesterday's game against the Reds, a game that the Dodgers win. This is just a Dodgers W5. W5.
I'm telling you. No one wins like five in a row. Friday. It's just like, no one wins five in W5. A row without blinking like the Dodgers.
It's incredible. He spoke to reporters, he and his interpreter pal, Will Ireton, and told us, not us, we were not there, but, you know, Royal We, that he is probably not going to pitch for the rest of the season. He would not say, he would not give it up completely. He would not actually unplug the console. He hoped that the red ring of death would go away. Guess what, Shohei? It doesn't. Okay? It doesn't. Instead, he said he's just going to focus on hitting. All right, bro. Sure. Quote, most likely, no, I'm going to be focusing on hitting moving forward. He went 0-for-3 last night with a walk and 2 Ks. Looked a little bit better. I watched all the open side videos. Fine. Yeah. I mean, this is not, it's news because he talked and he said it, but it's in line with what we were expecting for Ohtani.
Yeah, and I think really if there was anything revealing or just like into his psyche of this and why he decided to finally say, all right, because Dave Roberts for the last week has basically been saying it without saying it, saying it doesn't make any sense. You can do the math. We're running out of time for him to pitch, so we have to focus on getting him back feeling good offensively. I think this is also somewhat telling from Ohtani. Quote, I'm confident that my overall performance should be better moving forward. I think the thing that I was more focused on was making sure that the pitching wouldn't cause the worst case scenario, which was for me to not be able to play at all. So it does seem that what he was dealing with which I guess was maybe being exacerbated. We've referred to over and over with the Dodgers keep saying that whatever he's dealing with is not impacting his hitting. But this kind of does tell me that he's like admitting, if I continue to try to pitch, we would risk me getting hurt to the point where then I couldn't do anything. I mean, is that a fair, that's kind of what I'm reading that quote as.
Yeah.
Now, does that, I'm not trying to be overly dramatic and be like, okay, he can never pitch again because it will risk him never not being able to play any baseball. I'm not saying that, but it seems that he has finally, along with the Dodgers, come to the acceptance that trying to come back as a pitcher is not the focus right now, which now makes it just like, all right, dude, we're turn it back to 2024 mode. We watched him certainly in the regular season carry them offensively as the leadoff hitter, as the DH. His postseason performance in 24, it should be noted, was a little bit more uneven as a hitter. But now it's like, all right, dude, stop worrying about when you're going to throw your bullpen. Stop worrying about how you're going to work in this. Get back to being one of the best hitters in the world, which you are obviously capable of doing. And am I going to bet against him? No, I think that that is probably what is going to happen. Frankly, I think that now Ohtani is going to have a few weeks to get sorted on offense, and we don't have to, no longer can you ask him, hey, dude, is the fact that you keep running out there trying to throw a bullpen, is that taking away your time and expending more energy and risking? No, like, clearly he's still dealing with something. He's admitting, yes, I'm still dealing with the knee and the arm, whatever. But I think that this is certainly the right way to handle it, considering their starting pitching situation. And I'm now we can just get back to watching Ohtani the hitter, which is fully capable of being one of the most captivating players in the league. So we'll see how it goes.
That's our show. Congratulations to Tom Pannone, who threw a perfect game in AAA yesterday. That's really hard to do. Like, really hard to do. Not just because it's a perfect game, but in AAA. In the minor leagues, it's arguably like harder to throw a perfect game because no one throws nine innings in the minor leagues anymore.
Yeah. What an awesome do it in Durham. First nine inning perfect game in like almost 10 years in the minors. So shouts out to Thomas Pannone, who apparently I learned pitched in the major leagues this season for the Milwaukee Brewers. Did you know that? He has pitched in the big leagues. Just once, but perfect game. You are going to get our attention.
You remember how when we were on DAZN, we would always talk about the Pannone zone on DAZN? And we'd send it live to Tom Pannone.
one of my favorite bits. Before we say goodbye, just a reminder that the NFL season is about to start. So this is the last call to draft your fantasy football team for this season before the game start on Wednesday. And obviously, where should you be doing that? Here at Yahoo Sports.
Yahoo.
Is it okay?
I drafted on Sunday night. I did a draft. That league I mentioned last week, the redacted one. Yeah. I am in that. I did redact. I drafted with those redacted people.
Okay. Well, make sure if you're going to draft coming up, maybe I'll be inspired to pick some football players. And if I am, I will be doing it on Yahoo Sports.
If you're going to draft with redacted individuals, yeah, make sure you're doing it on Yahoo Sports. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Roz Tudor for producing. Please go subscribe to the Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel. Just do it because, I mean, what else are you doing right now, right? We will be back on Friday of this week. Until then, enjoy the ball.